हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, 17.
Yes.
Everybody on the same page. Right. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami considers the question why the all-powerful Lord does not stop Maya from bewildering the Jiva. Summary of text 33. In this next text, Jiva Goswami addresses subtle points concerning the Lord's external energy, Maya, and the nature of her relationship with the Supreme Lord. Although not his explicit intention, in doing so, Jiva Goswami resolves the philosophical dilemma that has been plaguing Western theistic scholars for millennia, the problem of evil, also referred to as theodicy, from the Greek theos, God, and justice. This question grapples with the seemingly contradictory coexistence of divine goodness on one hand and the existence of suffering on the other. If God is truly all-loving, all-knowing, and all-powerful, why does he permit bad things to happen to good people? Jiva Goswami gives several reasons why, implicitly answering many doubts. Text 33. The Lord does not interfere with the skillful actions of Maya. Nor can the Lord fail to be kindly disposed to her, the presiding deity of matter. His servant sets before the creation. He desires, moreover, that the jivas turn back towards him, even if only out of fear of her. Thus he instructs, Daivihyesha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hrit karna rasayana kata tajjo shanad ashva pavarga vartmani sharadha ratir bhakti anukramishyati. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, a person gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. And thereafter, he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-25. Yeah, so this point of being fixed, that's where real devotion, devotional service begins. So it's always about the stableness, the steadiness. Right? The more stable, the more steady, the more the natural qualities of devotional service appear.
Can we say that being stable is like a generic term for dealing with the anarthas? And instead of specific, then, because the anarthas are getting in the way of being steady.
There, but I'd say it's more of just stability and devotional service, because devotional service is coming because of that desire for it. Right? So if you're stable in that desire for devotional service and to be engaged, and when the opportunities are one is engaged, that's more the stability, rather than one's not doing anything wrong. It's more about that you're doing, that you're, it's not that you don't forget Krishna, it's about remembering Krishna.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the tendency is we always put it on the negative.
Yes.
You know, like we say, well, God is all good. Why is there evil? Yeah. Evil is just the not having good. That's all. You know, it's not that it's own entity. We make it sound like these two dynamics, grappling with each other. But it's like darkness, does it grapple with light? Mm-hmm. No, as soon as light's there, darkness goes. It's not that, you know, there's this whole dynamic in the morning when you get up, you know, when you
battle.
You know, kid gets up early and goes and wakes up his mommy, you know, and darkness and light are fighting outside. And,
it seems like that sometimes, but it's not real. When you're
getting how far north you are.
Touche.
Okay. The Lord wants every one of his creatures to be happy always. But true happiness outside voluntary loving service to him is impossible. He deputizes Maya to teach this lesson to the forgetful Jivas by various means. Those who are sufficiently intelligent can learn simply by hearing from Vedic authority, while others need to be instructed more sternly. This world exists not for our enjoyment and suffering, but for our spiritual re-education. Because otherwise this thing is here for being happy, or it's here as a punishment. No, it's just here to reform the living entities. That's all.
Yes.
It's not. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
It seems like a simple thing, but why the world religions, they can't get it. None of them.
If you want to retain that I'm the controller and enjoyer, then it's always going to be a problem. That's one thing, because there's never. In talk about surrender to God, it's not that your position and all that is necessarily given up. There may be that element of humility, but it's still kind of, it's depends. They come close, but the problem is then, more in the sentiment of devotion and things like that, they'll get a little closer, that element of surrender. But the philosophy, somehow or another, is really, doesn't seem to be very developed. They have fancy words, like you saw that. What it says? What is that? Right? Theodicy. The problem of evil.
They're good at defining.
They're great. And this is a short one. They have even bigger ones. They have these fabulous words. You know, it's like you've never heard of them before, but they mean some very exact thing. You know. You know, like the mole on the left foot underneath the big toe of Mother Mary. You know, and so then, you know, the discussion is about that. You know, they got this big, huge word, you know, and is it divine or is it not? Or, you know, like that kind of thing.
So that takes the focus away from the fact that they don't have any philosophy.
No, all you can think is there's not actually a deep sincerity to know. Otherwise, one would know.
Yeah.
Right? Because Krishna, it's about knowing. So anybody can, but they have an identity, and that identity then is connected with, though maybe ultimately with God, it's connected with, you know, the bodily conception, you know, like that, you know, because it all goes back, all of them do that, you know, just some of them are better at it, like that.
There's also the thing with guilt. If we start to talk about, is it our own fault?
But the point is even if it is our fault, but what are you going to do about it? You know, this whole element that if it's for guilty, then we should lament.
Yeah.
Then you don't get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not about that. But it's more of what you can do with the present.
Yeah.
So, it seems to either go one way or the other. Okay, here's Bhagavatam. Yes?
It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada deals with the point of evil really simply, but And in a short sentence, once I think Satchinanda Swami asking, you know, where is this Maya came from? Why is Maya always on our case? It's why Krishna is so bad? Because he created Maya, and Prabhupada said, no, you created your own Maya. And that was the end of the discussion.
Yeah, yeah. You create your own. I mean, she is that. It's just like, let's say that there, you know, it's just like there's a mouse trap sitting there, right? So if you stick your finger in it and it closes on your finger and you get hurt, you know, who's to blame?
Bad mouse trap.
Yeah. You know, I'm saying the point is Maya's there just because that's part of the Lord's energies, but you don't have to get involved in it. You know, it's not the bamboo spider.
Okay.
They're really big, but they don't bite her.
How do you know?
You never seen it before? Yeah, that's a big. They don't. It's not a tarantula. A
tarantula isn't like that.
These ones generally they all hide. It's probably the smoke. Is.
Yeah.
Oh.
No,
because the smoke's going over there. See, also the daddy long legs is not very.
They got tons of eyes, don't they?
Yeah.
So maybe they're all burned.
Yeah. So maybe it's just moving from the smoke.
So?
You've been like him once.
Hmm?
All of us have been like him once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family.
Been there, done that,
yeah.
Hopefully. Okay, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.2. So, it means that they have this idea they want to enjoy. That's where it starts, because material energy is perceived. Because material energy means you have two things. You have Maya and you have the external energy. Right? So she is the lord of the external energy, but it's more a state of mind, or state of existence is Maya. Right? So it's about trying to enjoy the Lord's energy. You don't try to do that, then you're technically not. You're not in mind, just like you're in the material world. If you don't try to enjoy the material world, you see it all in connection to Krishna, you're not controlled by Maya, even though you're in the locality of the external energy. Right? So it's not about the matter itself. It's about the consciousness that fixes one. So those who want to, then Krishna gives the facility. Here, the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air. So they can engage the senses. Right? But the difficulty is they will become, you know, they'll go through all the repeated births, they'll do all the things, and eventually they'll elevate themselves because it's not going to be satisfying. So at some point they're going to decide that this is, something's wrong. Why aren't we developing the way we want to?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That makes sense.
Yes.
Now, it's also, these points are, how do you say it? As we saw from Tattva Vivek, that then there's just standard mentalities.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they're unique to the modern world.
Yes.
So it's not so much that Jiva Goswami, you know, unintentionally answer these questions. These are just mentalities that people have. So you deal with that, then they apply at different times, different places, different circumstances. Does that make sense? So you don't have to target this particular time. Because things that people talk now as modern kind of thought have been being talked for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's just a matter of which is prominent at which time. You know,
yes.
You know, being love and nice and good and all that, that goes back to the 1700s, you know, that kind of a thing.
This book is 500 years old.
Yeah, you know, so that the whole point is these things have always been around, right? You go back to the Greeks, there are people talking like that, you know, so it's always been there. It's not that it's new. You know what I'm saying? That's the illusion that somehow or another modern man is new, it's different, it's fresh. Then we're saying that material energy is fresh. It's new. Yeah. But all it is the same thing over and over again. I mean, just look at fashion. What is it? You know, the cloth is smooth, it goes out of fashion. You bring it back textured, then now that's the latest craze. The same stuff, or the same, you know, the same pant. You put in pleats, you take out the pleats. You put in the belt buckles, you know, less. So you don't put in belt buckles. So the last one I saw is you put, you know, two or three belt buckles right next to each other. Not belt buckles, belt loops, all right? Yeah. You know, like that. Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's new, you know. You know, do you have a coin pocket? You don't have a coin pocket. Are they straight pockets? Are they angled pockets? Do you have back pockets? You know, like that. Do they put rivets in the corners of the pockets? You know, I mean, that's all they're doing. And somehow they go, wow, new, like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that stuff's always been there. Yes.
So then it sounds almost illogical then the jiva is choosing what is actually is not pleasant against what's, you know, spiritual reality and
yes,
pleasure and everything.
Yes, but there's the element of being the controller and enjoyer. So that's the thing, is that you choose the other, but that means you give up the idea that I will arrange it and I'll make it happen by my own potency. Right? So that element of security and everything like that. That's what.
So this is the turning point.
Yes, that's why the emphasis is always on, I am the, how you say, I'm, you know, part and part, it means the jiva, part and parcel of the Lord, we're not the body, I'm servant of God. Mm-hmm. Like that, Krishna is taking care of it. He's the creator, maintainer, destroyer. So we know he's the one that maintains everything. He'll take care of everything. You know, but generally, we have these problems, we don't think like that. Does that make sense? Probably go behind. We'll be happy back there. Quiet. Right, no smoke. No
smoking section.
Yes, no smoke. Right, see, I'll sit there. The jivas who learn to properly fear Maya become interested in taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. So even properly fear Maya. It's not even just to fear Maya, but properly fear Maya. But I mean, in other words, properly fearing means she can make you forget Krishna. That's proper. Not that, you know, she can make a lot of trouble. Then one can take shelter of the Lord, because that's what you're worried about. And the Vedas teach them to do so by keeping company with the pure devotees. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana comments, the verse from the Gita 7:14 indicates surrender to the Lord. He also teaches that the cause of becoming favorable is association with devotees. Tad vidhi pratipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. Know the Lord by surrender, questioning, and service. The seers of the truth, the jnanis, will teach you this knowledge. Bhagavad Gita 4:34. Right, so the surrender is the proper attitude. Then questioning means then application. Because why are you questioning? It's to apply. It's not a matter of... Of course, if there's doubts, you clear the doubts. So there's misgivings, you clear them. But it's more... The important is questioning so that you understand how to apply it in your own life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then service, then you apply that. Yes. Right, so it's service to the instruction. Mature, pure devotees of the Lord constantly chant His glories. But even in the company of immature devotees, one will eventually hear the glories of the Lord. Eventually. When Mangalarti comes around, then you'll hear that. Right. Still a doubt may arise, however. Why does the Lord permit Maya to constantly create obstacles, even for the jiva who wants to surrender to Him? Why does He allow her to attempt to tempt the sadhakas with various allurements to baffle their devotional service? The answer is in the Satam Prasangdan verse, in the word rasayana, tonic. The Bhada jivas are in a sick and weakened condition. Krishna Katha is the medicine for the infirm, immunizing them against material illusion and nursing them back to the healthy state of bhakti yoga. The Lord's only activity in the spiritual world is enjoying loving exchanges with his devotees, and his enjoyment would be disturbed by the intrusion of diseased jivas. Maya therefore implores... Disease genius coming in like zombies.
Brains.
Yeah, okay. The Lord's only act. Okay. And Maya therefore employs various creative means to preserve the sanctity of the Lord's abode, ensuring that no one bothers the Lord and his intimate devotees. Maya sends obstacles in order to reinforce the strength of the devotee's love and sincerity. To do this, she has to give the living entities the reactions to their sinful deeds, deter them from future transgressions, and impel them to search for a way out of the samsara sagara, the ocean of birth and death. Krishna does not interfere with her assigned service, and she has been performing it since beginningless time. Yes?
When we say that the devotee's karma is Krishna karma?
Yes. So that's what she... But she is arranging it. But it's not being arranged by the modes. He sanctions. But the point is, she knows what to do. So on certain things, she just does it. It's already been sanctioned. Oh. You know what I'm saying? But the you know, the basic thing. But the principle is that the Lord is involved. So we say Krishna karma is still... The reactions are going to come by her arrangement. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, she works, how the things in the material world function are by the modes of nature. But it's not that the devotee is necessarily under the modes of nature in that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. They may be affected by, so that's what will be used. Mm-hmm. But the point is that it's still different from the karmis. The karmi is that you've done this, you're going to get this reaction. Now the devotee, if he's changed his mentality, there may be no need of that reaction. Or by getting that reaction, then there'll be some kind of instruction or that for others. Does that make sense? Like Yudhishthira doesn't have any karma that he needs to lose a whole empire. But by it, then everyone's instructed. Right? Because, you know, I mean, the problem of losing a position, power struggles like that, all these different things, then, you know, these are going on in day-to-day life. So then you see how he deals with it. And then you can learn from that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Is it also that we should remember to think of it as just tools for bhakti, that losing an empire is not good or bad necessarily?
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, we'll say it's good or bad.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The point is how you engage it in service. So it's only done in that... You present it in that way if we're looking at good and bad in the world. Mm-hmm. But when it doesn't matter, then... then the point is if it matters to you, then you get that kind of reaction. When it doesn't matter to you, then you could get or not. It doesn't matter. You know, just like the devotee follows the rules so they'll be engaged in devotional service. The advanced devotee doesn't need to follow the rules to be engaged in devotional service, but at the same time they don't have any reason not to follow the rules. You know what I'm saying? So that therefore then, you know, it does go. Yes.
Isn't there also an element that Maya tests us on the points where we are weak, so she is pointing out that part that we have to work on?
Yes, yes.
Of repenting those activities, we will get purified.
Yes, yes, of course.
There's a verse in 11th or 12th canto where it says that the devotee is performing the activities that he's not supposed, and he's cursing himself and saying, I will go to hell. But still, I would not give up my devotional service.
Yeah.
And from that repentance, he is getting purified. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
If somebody is Krishna conscious but is not under
the... A little louder, please.
If somebody who is Krishna conscious is not under the modes but is still acting, or still, or the modes are still there, like...
Means you work with the modes, you're not controlled by the modes.
So how does one know when they're not under control?
Means if you're just being, if you're doing your service in a steady fashion, That's the main thing, is that stability. That work? Yes.
So, Maharaj, chanting all around, associating with devotees, going to morning program, it's all goes in this steady service. When we see that when we do it properly in a steady way, then we can see that we are not under the influence of modes.
It's not a matter of trying to be not under the influence of modes. It's about trying to be in contact with Krishna.
Yes.
Those things are just symptoms that you can tell. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, you're cooking, right? And then you check now and again to see if the potatoes are soft. But is it about making soft potatoes? That's the goal? You understand? So it's just, there's symptoms, so you just check those. But that's not where the focus is. So focus is not, you know, whether I'm under the modes or not. The focus is on, are we Krishna conscious or not? Is that okay? You're still smiling about the face.
Yeah. It's still balancing that.
Yeah. You're waiting for the butter and the sour cream.
I was just wondering about this, no reward by surrender, and I was thinking because I saw the spider, and then I was thinking about like this anxiety, you know, from the biting, you know, one of the devotees, myself, whatever. Then I was thinking, I was thinking about like, you know,
can
why
jump about 6 feet, you know.
Why?
I didn't know they could do that.
But then I was thinking about the anxiety, and it means, why is the anxiety? Because desire, material desire, is still there. So.
Yeah, no, just there's some material desire, some identity is there, because
yeah.
Then what's the anxiety? What's it going to do? And he said, bite. When will it bite? You know, worried it's going to bite this rock here.
Yeah,
you're bite yourself.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So there's still the identity with that. Like that. Otherwise, it's not an anxiety. It's just that, you know, if the spider's coming, you move out of the way so it doesn't bite you, because, you know, it's an inconvenience. You know?
Yes. Live as long as possible to do service as well, Krishna.
No. Always try to be engaged in Krishna's service. So, you know, if your arms swelled up, you know, like that, then it's not necessarily your ideal situation for service. You know, and, you know, unless your job is, you know, you walk around in the street advertising Michelin tires or something, then it won't matter.
Yeah. Could be a good thing.
And this one might like that?
No. I don't know. They just get into a spot and just stay there. They don't. I mean, especially like this, they'll just sit there for weeks. They won't move. So that's why I'm not worried about that. So many times you see them, they're like sitting there, and they're always there.
Okay, first.
Yeah,
Maharaj, it says in the second chapter in the Gita, it says that one can enter, if one's situated at the time of death, then one can enter into the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, rightly situated, you know. So, then with that mentality, I was not rightly situated for receiving the bite. You know, so then need to work on that, or?
Yeah. It's just a matter of being aware, and so therefore trying to be more conscious of Krishna. It means you'll contemplate what would be the appropriate way to think about it, or what would be the appropriate thing to do.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we just sit there and, you know, let them, you know, go find a place where there's a lot of spiders and let them crawl all over us. It's a matter
training.
Of
training.
It's a matter of just, you know, that, you know, spiders are a problem, so therefore you just stay out of their way, right? You know, they do their spider thing and you avoid their spider thing, you know. You know what I'm saying? Because you have better things to do.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. And they don't like potatoes, don't worry. You pulled up a potato.
Yeah.
potatoes. Yeah, it might work.
Okay, philosophy.
Yes.
Quite far out there.
Yes.
Maharaj, on this point, the mature, pure voice of the Lord constantly chanting is glorious. I was thinking, you know, in the story of Narada Muni, that he left alone, and other people would react differently, but he took, you know, Krishna consciousness seriously. But it depends really on the level of consciousness. Otherwise,
yes,
it would be a really difficult situation. He's a kid, no mother, nobody's to take care.
Yeah. Especially how young he is. It's not like he's 16.
Yeah, and
16,
he's the son of Maitreya, so not that he's got a kingdom or anything. He's
yeah,
got
yeah.
like nothing.
Yeah. 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 No, so it's yeah, so that's the thing, he's constantly chanting. But he was a mature, pure devotee.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why, because otherwise people would go depressed, people would go, different scenario.
Yeah. Go find another ashram.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why it means these stories are there so that we can get some inspiration, you know, on how to what we can do in our life. It's like what it is that how we could approach it, how would we apply it? Because these things are happening in our life, you know, a small scale way, and occasionally, you know, bigger scale, but they're all happening like that. You know, so then it's just a matter of, like what you said, then what do you do? Because the material is not going to solve any problem. Though there is standard material ways of dealing, you know, so that if one is, that has those attachments and emotions, then there's standard ways to express that is, you know, acceptable and everybody is comfortable with that. You know, just so that you have a nice social environment. But otherwise, let's say, on like, you know, Tapalok and Dhanalok, these ones, then they don't necessarily worry about all those. You know, they don't, you know, they just, you know, sit under their tree and that's about it. You know?
They're busy with their own meditation.
Yeah. There's a good chance there aren't any family or anything. So. You know, trees last a long time, so you don't have to worry your tree dies.
The good life.
Hmm?
The good life.
The good life. No, we're just wondering about the intense meditation.
Wondering if there's spiders.
Yeah.
Okay. Never again.
Okay. We're worried about it. That's why you didn't never saw spiders in Ireland, because there was too many potatoes, so they stay away. Yeah.
More potatoes.
Yeah.
In the third verse of the Sikshasika, it's mentioned that if one is humble, one can be steady. So what is the connection between Maya's, you know, endeavors to, you know, reform us and humility?
Well, if you think I'm the controller and enjoyer, then one's always be disturbed. If one, you know, is humble, but the only way you can really be humble is as a servant of the Lord. But otherwise, if you're, you know, humble, it'll go a little easier. But generally, people who are conditionally humble, then much of the time they don't have as much problem. Or even if they do, it goes by, no one really notices. But humility, you know, comes from understanding how we're servant of Krishna. Because right, the verses are, you know, going basically in kind of an order. Right, so I'm taking shelter of the holy name, and just like that, then one can be humble. When it's humble, you can be tolerant, right? Because if you're proud, how you'll be tolerant, right? And if you're humble and tolerant, then you can respect others. Otherwise, then how do you respect others? And not look for respect for yourself, right? Like that. Then you can be stable and chanting, like that. So those are the things, you know, disrespecting others, wanting respect, not being tolerant, not being humble. That's what gets in the way of stable chanting.
It's through what mechanism? It's through the taste being withdrawn from our bhajan, from our experience of the name?
Meaning?
I mean, how? Why can't one chant steadily if one is not, you know, offering respect to others?
I would think that there'd be so many more important things to do.
Okay.
Because if you're looking for respect, then you have to actively go after that, because no one else is generally doing it for you. You know, maybe your mom will do it, but then the other than that, or if you're rich enough, you know, you can have a hire a guy who will do that. But other than that, then you know.
So it's the passion.
Hmm?
It's the passion, the hankering.
Yeah, there'd be so many things. Tolerant, then the, you know, the ignorance, you get angry about everything, so then you'd be always thinking about that. You know, because you're too disturbed that they can't chant, or, you know, there's that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just think of that. Because if you're the, you know, controller and enjoyer, then there's so many things to think about, there's no tolerance, then everything disturbed by so many things, and, you know, you have to offer respect to others, that'll be an annoyance. But, you know, you are looking for the respect for yourself. So there'll just be so many distracting elements. You know, so you don't have to get into what you're distracted by.
Mm-hmm.
You just get it. Because that comes in the next verse. When those are there and you study, then you don't want all these things. Because otherwise, then you'll be distracted by those things. Dharam Janam Sundarim. You know, that's what you'll be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yet another question may arise: if the punishment inflicted on the jivas is for their own good, then why provide any pleasure in the material world? Why not toss the jivas into a lake of fire to experience unceasing misery? Then they would have no choice but to make complete shelter of God. But the question is, the lake of fire, so what is the lake made out of that's always burning?
Yeah.
Because they always talk about a lake of fire, right?
Lava, maybe lava.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been thinking about it.
Yeah.
Good one.
Okay. The first reply is that ceaseless mercy, misery, is not good for developing transcendental understanding, since one's mind becomes too disturbed for contemplating spiritual truths. Secondly, there's a world of difference between simple aversion to pain and the development of pure unalloyed love. Thirdly, any jiva with a bit of transcendental intelligence will recognize the world for what it is, a temporary place of miseries, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. The happiness experienced here is like the pleasure felt by a man who is repeatedly dunked in water and then brought to the surface before drowning. The Lord is impelling the jivas to seek out the source of true, lasting happiness. Finally, it is worth stating that the Lord is far from indifferent to the plight of his jivas. Out of his causeless mercy, he imparts the Vedic literatures and regularly appears in this world in order to preach the message of bhakti. He illuminates the darkness of the material sphere through guru, sadhu, and shastra. Thus, there is a cosmic two-step rehabilitation program for the jivas. Maya kicks them, the Lord instructs them.
So it's, yeah, instead of 12, we only need two.
That's good. Yeah, and the Lord's there in the heart with the living entity. He's always with the jivas, so it's not that he's... 33.2. The Supreme Lord in his pastime appearance of Sriman Vyas taught the above most explicitly. We will see this later when we discuss the text. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated. So here's the thing is, they're superfluous to them. So throwing them into a lake of fire, but the point is the miseries that are there have nothing to do with the soul. Mm-hmm. The problem comes because the soul identifies with it. It's not that you're tossing the soul into a lake of fire, because nothing would happen. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But so it's the soul identifies with the body. That's the difficulty.
Yes.
So that could go back to what Mataji's question was before, is that a difficulty comes up is that they always identify with the body. That's why they can't understand. Because if you discuss with any of the, you know, world religions, then what is the soul? Then you'll get something, the body, or there'll be the mind, or all variety, depending upon the individual you'll kind of get, or the particular group, they'll have their own little particular idea. You know, so that, you know, or the Buddhists will say there's nothing, you know, so that's not much better. So.
Wonder why they want to be non-violent if nothing exists anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's the point. You know, that's why it's. That's why it says the Lord bewildered the atheists. That and some, they say all these weird old things. And, you know, it sounds great, but
yeah.
But so the point is, it's superfluous to him. So that's the thing to learn, is that the soul, whatever you do, whether it's nice or it's not nice, the soul's not satisfied in the material world. Thus, the behavior of both the Lord and Maya is appropriate. But someone may question, Maya is an energy, and energy means a capacity to do work, which is a particular quality of something. How then can Maya feel shame and other emotions? Our answer is that even though Maya is in fact an energy of the Lord, we hear from Shruti authority about the presiding goddess of numerous such energies. Goddesses of numerous such energies, as for example in the conversation between Indra and Maya in the Kena Upanishad. In any case, let us now return to our main topic. But in other words, it's not an important topic. It's on the side. Here Jiva addresses the misconception that energy means impersonal. Maya is our teacher, but some may question how she can have intentions and feelings if she is merely energy. An unconscious thing, Baladev Vidyabhushan asks. It was said that Maya is ashamed because she bewilders the jiva. How is it that possible, since Maya is insentient and just a quality like enthusiasm? It is concluded in scripture that Maya has a controlling deity. This is similar to the deities which control mountains like the Vindhyas. To clear this misunderstanding, Srila Jiva Goswami mentions the Kena Upanishad pastime in which Maya appears in person. She is the deity of the total material energy and is also known as Uma, the daughter of the Himalaya mountains and the wife of Lord Shiva. What follows is the account of her conversation with Indra. Once the Supreme fought on behalf of the gods and won victory for them, by this victory of the Supreme, the gods became glorified. They thought, this is our own victory and our own glory. The Supreme understood their mentality and so manifested himself before them. The gods, however, did not recognize the Supreme. They asked, who is this Yaksha? They told the fire god Agni, O knower of everything created, find out who this Yaksha is. He answered, yes, I will do it. Agni came before the Yaksha, who asked him, who are you? Agni replied, I am indeed the god of fire. I know everything created. What power do you possess? Indeed, I can burn anything that exists in this world. The Yaksha placed a blade of grass in front of Agni and said, burn this. Agni approached the grass and tried with all his might to burn it, but could not. Returning to the gods, he told them, I could not discover who this Yaksha is. Then they told the wind god Vayu, O wind, find out who this Yaksha is. He answered, yes, I will do it. Vayu came before the Yaksha, who asked him, who are you? Vayu replied, I am indeed the god of wind. I am the swift traveler of outer space. What power do you possess? Indeed, I can lift up anything that exists in this world. The yaksha placed a blade of grass in front of Vayu and said, "Lift this." Vayu approached the grass and tried with all his might to lift it, but could not. Returning to the gods, he told them, "I could not discover who this yaksha is." Then they told Indra, "O munificent king of the gods, find out who this yaksha is." Indra answered, "Yes, I will do it." Indra approached the yaksha, but as soon as he came near, the yaksha disappeared. Just then, a resplendent woman appeared in the sky above that place. She was Uma, the daughter of the Himalayas. Indra approached her and asked, "Who was that yaksha?" She told him, "This was the Supreme. By that Supreme's victory only have you, the gods, become glorious." Thus Indra could understand that was the Supreme. Therefore these gods, Agni, Vayu, Indra, are greater than the other gods, for they came into close contact with the Supreme, and they were the first to understand this is the Supreme. Kenu Upanishad 3:1-4-2. Right, so we also could see from here that this is the kind of language and kind of the way the stories are told in the Vedas. So even though it's talking about, you could understand that these are the demigods with power over everything within the material world, but they have no power before the Lord, so his power is greater. Right? And there should be that element of surrender to appreciation of, but it doesn't take it necessarily farther. Right? It may mention about devotion, but it doesn't get into so much detail. But it's not that all the points aren't mentioned somewhere. Otherwise, how is Narad Muni pulling from that pure devotion? How do the agamas, you get the Pancharatra that shows the full deity worship system? So everything is there, but it has to be drawn from. Just like you have a whole bunch of milk, you have to churn it to get the butter. Right? So the whole idea is that the Bhagavatam is the butter. Right? You don't have to do the churning. Right? The key point Srila Jiva Goswami is impressing is that when Srila Vyasa says he saw Maya standing behind the Lord out of embarrassment, he is not speaking figuratively. She really is a person. Lastly, one may ask, if Maya Devi, the predominating deity of the material energy, can handle all her own affairs without interference, what is the need for Paramatma to control this world? Krishna answers this in Bhagavad Gita. Sarva yoni shukonteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahad yonir aham bija pradapita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material world, and that I am the seed-giving father. Bhagavad Gita 14:4. Just as a woman cannot conceive a child without help of a potent man, Maya cannot manage a material world without the help of Paramatma. Maya has her innate potencies for serving the Supreme Lord, but still she needs his help in carrying out her duties. For this reason, Vyasa saw that she was dependent on the Lord. A fact Krishna confirms when he says, Maya dyakshena prakriti sute sacharacharam. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction. Because the energy only functions because of its connection with energetic. Otherwise, there isn't any. You know, it doesn't work. Right? The next Anucheda further explains Sri Vyasa's trance, particularly how the jiva is conscious and distinct from the Lord. Sambandha, defeating Mayavad and establishing a Chintabheda-Veda Tattva on the basis of Vyasa's realization. 34-43. Summary of 34. This short but important Anucheda summarizes the seventh limb of Dasamul, the Chintabheda-Veda-Vad. Mahaprabhu's Vedanta philosophy of inconceivable sameness and difference between God and his energies. In his commentary, Baladeva Vidyabhushan discusses the soul, material energy, the Lord, time, and karma. So then you're getting all the those five aspects that Gita establishes. 34. The phrases, under his shelter and by whom the jiva is bewildered, also show the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord, even though the jiva, like him, is pure spirit. Anucheda 34 may be only one line, but Baladeva Vidyabhushan cites 10 scriptural references to explain it, for he states, the nature of existing substances, of vastus, should be known from Shruti and Smriti. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan establishes using the transitive relation, the difference between the Supreme Controller and the Infinite Soul. Mayam Chatad Apashrayam, Srimad Bhagavatam 174, shows that Maya is controlled by the Lord. Yaya Samohito Jiva, Srimad Bhagavatam 175, shows that the Jiva is controlled by Maya. This shows that the Jiva is different from the Lord. It is said in the verse that Vyasasa Apashyat Maya. This implies time. Footnote 8. This implies time because the verbs he saw, apashyat, he considers, manute, he is bewildered, samohito, each indicate action, which in turn necessitate the influence of time. This means that Vyasa saw four distinct entities. The Supreme Controller, Ishvara, the living entities, Jivas, the material nature, Maya, and time, Kala, footnote 9. Together with karma, which Baladeva Vidyabhushan will discuss momentarily, these make up the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, according to Srila Prabhupada.
Right. How many topics are discussed in Bhagavad Gita? Do we have the same?
It means you'll always have these aspects, but then it's putting your emphasis on, how you say, that means there's that relationship here, and this establishes sambandha. But then how to apply that? What's the importance of this? So therefore the sambandha is that we're servants of the Lord. Right? And then that's applied as the, how you say, implied as devotional service. That's your best application. And then the result you'll get from that is pure love for God. So it'll be emphasized, you'll get that whole picture. Right? The Gita is establishing the same thing, but it's spending a lot of time on discussing these five and establishing their relationship. Right? And how to deal, how the living entity becomes controlled by Maya, how he gets out of Maya, all these aspects. Does that make sense? So Bhagavatam is then establishing how to apply all this in devotional service. That flies by here and the spider goes like that. Goes back inside. Yes.
He just doesn't know on this diagram at the beginning, like on the top of who he puts Bhagavad Gita and Sambandha, Bhagavatam and Abhideya and Chaitanya Charitamrita on the
present. I mean, you can do like that also. Yeah. It's not. It means all three of them have all three aspects. It's just where the emphasis is. Because the Bhagavatam is showing predominantly how to do that service so that you can see Krishna and the service of those devotees who are. But then that, how that love of God is appreciated and all that, that's what's brought out in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? That's why that section is called Prema Chakshus.
Right?
Yes.
So Maharaj is four distinct entities: Supreme Lord, the living entity, material nature, and time. Altogether, are they called the Absolute Truth?
Are they?
Are they named the Absolute Truth in Bhagavatam? The first.
Are they all?
Together, name.
Oh, the Absolute Truth? Yes. No, I mean, it means on one level you could say, because time is activities, karma is results. But that's just showing the mechanics of it. But then in dealing with that, then you show what's the actual proper use of that. So time is used by engaging in the Lord's service. And then that result, that will be that transcendental love for the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Because the absolute truth would be, basically, the first three are counted as the absolute truth.
Yes.
Like that. Because in dealing, you're dealing with sambandha, the relationship, so all those three are there.
Yes.
Then you're applying
yes.
that in time and you're getting the result as karma.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But all of that's described in the first three. You know, just like we saw, is that in the introduction to Gita that when it, describing the sambandha aspect, it already has told the elements that you're working with in Abhideya and the results you can get in Vyojana.
Yes.
But it's still knowledge. You're not doing it. You're not getting the results yet.
Yes.
Right? And then, having explained all that, then it mentions about then performing the activity and then getting the result.
Yes.
You're so, because you'll experience that result.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We can talk about if you do this, you can develop love for God, but we're not experiencing
yes.
it.
Yes.
So that means that's sambandha. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, or we're saying, yes, chanting the holy name is the best process. This is all sambandha.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the main topic, is always that. Now, you may be talking about various aspects within it. You know, so therefore the Shankar Jumna Anirudha Vasudeva, these four you may be focusing on. The subject matter itself, the mood in which it's done, the process itself, or the results that could be gained. That's what we'll be discussing. But now it's just a matter of which shastra, which aspect you, I mean, where you are in the shastra, which part it emphasizes.
Yes.
Like that. Like Nectar Devotion will be focusing on the process part.
Yes.
But it's still explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But he's explaining Abhideya.
So Vyasadeva saw all these four topics, I can say.
He saw all this, and it also, he says, karma.
And
he's seeing all this, so all those topics will always be discussed, just like we see the Tattva Sutras, when we're analyzing the Upanishad. Then you always have chit, achit, ishwara, then you have bhakti, and then prayojan.
Yes.
You know, your Abhideya and Prayojana. Upanishads also the same thing. What is the concept of the Supreme? What's the concept of the living entity? What's the concept of the material world?
Yes.
What is the process by which the jiva gets elevated? And having elevated himself, what is his position? What's his relationship with those other three? You know, with the Supreme. So it always comes down to these. But the point is your chitta chit ishwar is your main point, because if you don't understand that, how will you apply? Right, because if you can't figure out, you know, like where the steering wheel is, where the parallels are, where's the seat, the door, the window, you know, if you can't figure that out, then what's the point of talking about driving or getting a result from driving? You know what I'm saying? The guy goes to the back, opens the boot, goes and sits inside. There's no use talking about driving. You know? You know? Does that make sense? So these three are there, then in relationship to that, you're applying that, and then you're getting the result from having applied that. So it's still chitta chit ishwar. Because right? That's the relationship. You're just operating the relationship and getting the result from the relationship.
Right? Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Yes, okay.
All four of these are eternal, according to the Balaveya Shruti. Ataha Vava Nityani Purusha Prakriter Atma Kala. Now all of these are eternal. The creator, nature, the soul, and time. Upanishads also state, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovi Dhati Kaman. He is the one eternal among all eternals. The one conscious being among all conscious beings. The one who supplies the needs of all the others. Katha Upanishad 2.5.13. Ajam e. So that all the jiva is eternal, the Lord is eternal, material energy is eternal. Just material energy is maybe temporarily manifest. Or the jiva may be position within the material world and the spiritual world, but the point is they're all eternal. Also, time is eternal. Right? It's always there. But karma, that's the thing that can change. It's not that you won't get results, but karma here, meaning material results, that will go away, because you'll get spiritual results. So the principles are eternal, so they never go away. This is always the Lord, the living entity, the environment, the activity of exchange between them, and the experience gained or from that exchange. That's always there. Does that make sense? Ajam ekam lohitam shukla krishnam bhavi praja shrijamanam sarupa ajo yeko jushamano nushete jahat yenam bhukta bogam ajo nyaha. One female goat gives birth to many offspring like herself, with bodies colored red, white, and black. One male goat lies with her and enjoys her, while another shows no interest in enjoying her, for he feels satiated. Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.5.
Good example.
Yeah.
Mars, red, white, and black, passion, goodness, ignorance.
Huh? Yeah, good.
Is it cryptic, or is it actually...
The explanation is in the next paragraph.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Here it comes.
The Upanishadic text invoked by Baladev Vidibhushan involves a play on the word aja, female, aja, which means both goat and eternal being.
There you go.
Yeah. The eternal female, material nature, replicates her three modes, goodness, white, passion, red, and ignorance, black, in the bodies of all life forms. It's becoming a seer.
Adam Rishi.
It must be all those potatoes. One eternal male, the fallen jiva, tries to enjoy nature, while the other eternal male, the self-satisfied Supreme Lord, shows no interest in her. Sri Vishnu Purana 1:1, 29, 19, and 26 also confirms that each of the four major constituents of material creation are eternal. I offer my obeisances to the unchanging, all pure, eternal Supreme Lord, Supreme Soul, Lord Vishnu, the conqueror of all, who always appears in his same personal form. When the time for creation arises, right, because here he appears in the same personal form, means he doesn't have to change forms to go anywhere or appear. Like the jiva has to. When the time for creation arises, he agitates material nature. By his own choice, that same Lord Hari enters into exhaustible nature, Pradhan, and expands himself as the inexhaustible creator, Purusha. The original state of nature called Pradhan is the undifferentiated ingredient cause of all creation. The best sages know her as Prakriti, subtle and eternal. She comprises the elements of cause and effect. Almighty time has no beginning and no end. O learned Brahmana, thus creation, maintenance, and annihilation continue forever without interruption. Time begins to act only after Lord Vishnu has impregnated nature by his glass, which includes the jiva. So there's a manifestation of it, and that, but it's always there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which includes the jivas, their karma, and time. In other words, the beginning of material creation lies outside the scope of material time. But even before this beginning, before the material creation is manifest, the jiva's nature and time, all eternal, are dormant within the transcendental body of Karnanadakshaya Vishnu. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, time is also an energy of the Supreme Lord. Se yavad urvya bharam ishvareshvara svakala shaktya kshapayam charet bhuvi. Please assist the Lord of Lords for as long as he lives on the earth to relieve her of her burden by his own potency in the form of time. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.22. Among the four basic entities in material creation, Ishwara, Jiva, Maya, and Kala, The supreme controller, Ishwara, is the infinite living being. And the innumerable living entities, Jivas, are the infinitesimal living beings. Both Ishwara and Jiva eternally possess the quality of consciousness. Inert matter, Maya, is qualified by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Time, Kala, devoid of the three modes, produces the perception of change through the phases of past, present, and future. There also exists a fifth basic entity in material creation, namely karma, which is inert and beginningless but can have an end. The true nature of karma, the subtle law of cause and effect, is taught throughout the Shrutis and Smritis. In other words, karma is always there, but for the individual living entity, it has an end. Like that. But the others, but they'll continue on, but he won't have anything more.
But time, we also stop being involved in.
It means material time, then you're involved in spiritual time.
Yes.
Like that. Just like spiritual results, spirit relation with the Lord, then there's no achit, right? There's only the spiritual energy.
So when we mention here that karma can have an end, it's to indicate that there's a kind of a prayojana.
It means that there's an end in material existence, like that. That's what you're trying to indicate. The material existence stops at some point.
Yes.
Okay. For example, in the Vedanta Sutras 2.135, na karma vibhagad iti chen nana ditvat. Opponents view. One cannot reconcile the Supreme Lord's apparently preferential treatment of some living entities by appealing to the law of karma. Because prior to the beginning of creation, nothing existed apart from him, not even karma. Thus, in the beginning, the jivas could not each have had separate individual karmas. Reply, no karma has no beginning. Okay.
Can we say that karma cannot exist without living entities, separately from them?
No, but the point is, it's just like Maya can exist without the living entities.
She
does exist. But the point is the manifestation of it, that will be because the jivas are interested in enjoying separately from the Lord. Then you get the manifestations of all these. Otherwise, all these things are inherently part of the Lord. But it's just a matter of whether they manifest or not. Does that make sense? It's just like a person has so many aspects of his personality. Or so much facility, but you only manifest them according to the need. Does that make sense?
So it's also conscious?
Which?
Karma.
Not necessarily, because the point is karma means the reaction to work. So it's not that karma itself has to be. It means there's personalities that manage it. But it's still a potency. Otherwise, if it's not a potency, how would you get? So when it says Maya, then there's going to be cause and effect. Right? So cause will be, time will cause, and then effect will be karma. So Maya means that cause and effect are there. Within this realm.
Why did Krishna manifest demons?
Why did he manifest demons?
Yeah, when Lord Brahma created them and then they were manipulating him or something. Why would he do that?
No, they're always there. If people have, means people coming to the material world, then they're coming here to enjoy separately from the Lord, so it's about themselves. So it's just a matter of you take that mentality to extreme, then you get demons. You know, in other words, if it's going away from the Lord, it becomes demoniac. If it's going towards the Lord, it becomes pious. Like that. So therefore, it's, you always have the divine and the demoniac. It's always going to be there.
But Krishna exists within everyone's heart, even the demons.
Yeah.
So can you say that the demons are servants of Krishna also?
Everybody's servant of Krishna. It's just whether they're acknowledging it or not. Yes, and devotees acknowledge it. Pious people acknowledge God's laws, but not necessarily God himself. You know, it means, or a relationship with him. It's not important. The demons means they don't worry about God's laws other than what they can get out of them.
So even demons would go back to Godhead eventually?
Everybody goes back to Godhead eventually.
Because isn't it that at the end when Kalki comes, then those people that don't make it back, they just get unmanifest, and then they get manifest later again?
No, that means their situation is adjusted, but then they'll just take birth again wherever they belong.
Not in such a yoga?
Not necessarily.
And then they'll just make it back eventually.
It means everybody being in the material world for a long time starts to wonder, why am I trying to be happy and it's not quite working out? Right? So then, you know, they may, by the Lord's grace, they come in contact with the devotees. By that association, they'll develop faith. Right? And then with that faith, they'll take up devotional process. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So eventually everybody goes back to God. It's just a matter of how much time. Yes?
I'm not clear about spiritual time.
Spiritual time.
Yes.
It's basically an experience.
Only
because even now, it's the important thing about time is the experience you gain from it.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise you just judge that you're going to do things in a particular thing because you want particular experiences. But here we're controlled by time, you know, just like we're controlled by the modes.
Yes.
In the spiritual world, then time is, it's not a matter of its control, it's a matter of pleasing the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So the effect of time will be experienced in that way.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, the experience you get in dancing with Krishna for a night of Brahma is what they will get in, you know, that time, you know, that they have.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that.
It's like a constant experience.
Yeah, but it'll change. Just
yes,
like Krishna
yes.
going out with the cowherd boys to the field. Yes. Even though it's long distance, it doesn't seem to take much time. Right, because it's not controlled by time, right? You know, it's not that they get there. It's like they want to be there, you know, quickly. Then they're there quickly.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's not. Time is an experience. It's not a.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually just everything's. You know,
yes,
just a big. You know.
Seems that in the material sphere, we're noticing time when we're not. Very comfortable. When you're having fun, it kind of just...
Yeah. You know, I mean, you notice when it ends.
Yeah. But that's the discomfort it brings, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're always having a good time, then you don't notice time. So good time means unnoticed time.
Yes. I was having a little time.
I say, it's the only good time is that time.
Yes.
Yes. No. Yeah. Or as they would say, the only good potato is a baked potato.
Yes.
It's a matter of opinion.
Yeah. maybe some other ways.
Mash.
Mash also works. Now, have you tried baking ant mash?
Bake mash chip.
Variety there. But seems to be there's a developed some higher developed consciousness.
Something is happening.
Yes, yes. Some social order is there.
It's an emerging middle class. That's why it's so okay. It's so okay. It's out of the
difference. Oh, I see. It's growing. Yeah, okay, emerging. Otherwise, it's just whatever you can get out of the fire and boil it, right?
You just shoot the potato. Huh? You just shoot the potato.
Work on itself. Summary of text 35. Srila Jiva Goswami has carefully analyzed Srila Vyasadeva's trance, and on that basis will now present arguments against the Mayavad theory of the absolute oneness of the Supreme Soul and the Jivas. And this Anucheda establishes that the Jiva is different from Brahman. Text 35. It is unreasonable to propose that the one pure spiritual entity, Brahman, has the power to maintain Maya and is full of perfect knowledge and yet becomes an object of the influence of Maya and is overcome by ignorance. Right? He's already saying that's how you produce the jivas.
Yes.
Therefore, we can understand that the jiva and God are different, and from the fact that the jiva and God display different identities and capabilities, we can deduce that they are in fact two separate entities. Right? So you can't have that Brahman, you know, is being maintaining and full of perfect knowledge, comes under the influence of Maya, and therefore becomes the Jiva. Otherwise, then, like you said, you know, which side? You know, is the left side, the right side, upside down, back, front, you know, yeah. And then by their identities and capacities, you can also understand their different entities. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami compared impersonalism to a tigress who devours one's spiritual life. He said, "My dear mind, never listen to talk about liberation, which is like a tigress who swallows everything, including the self." Manasiksha 4. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made the same stern warning. Quote, "Hearing Mayavad philosophy completely destroys one's spiritual life." Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 6.153. Because it's going to... Why would you say it would destroy spiritual life? Because spiritual life actually is developing a relationship with God. And so this destroys that concept that there is no difference. There isn't really any... You know, it means whatever you're talking about doesn't really exist. There is no really Maya. There's no Jiva. There's only Brahman. Then where is the actual spiritual life?
Life means activities.
Yeah, because yes, life means activities. Life means that there's something, there's some feeling, some involvement. But by their definition, Brahman just exists, right? So that's why it said it's just covered Buddhism. Mm-hmm. Buddhism is just there's nothing, there's void. Mm-hmm. So all we've done is turn the light on. That's all we've done, really. Yes. You know, that's the difference between the two. Srila Madhvacharya presented forceful refutations of the Mayavad theory in a similar vein. One of his most impressive efforts in this line was his Mayavad Khandanam. In this and other works, he exposed the Mayavad's misuse of grammatical analysis and their faulty logic, which they resort to in their vain attempt to prove the absolute non-difference between Brahman and Jiva. In the same mood, Srila Jiva Goswami will refute the Mayavad theory in the next few Anuchedas and conclude by exhorting his readers to further investigate the Mayavadi's unintelligible concoctions. In other words, Srila Jiva Goswami expects the followers of Sri Gauranga to consider it their duty to defeat the impersonalist word jugglery in as many ways as possible. When the Mayavadis are so thoroughly exposed, that not one of the pillars supporting their errant doctrine is left standing, that only fools will fall prey to their misleading ideas. The impersonalists headed by Shankaracharya based their tenets on Vedanta Sutras and the 11 principal Upanishads, and they also try to support their arguments with Bhagavad Gita. Srila Jiva Goswami contends that their interpretations fly in the face of what Srila Vyasadeva experienced in trance, which is narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of both Shruti and Smriti. Ever since Sripad Shankaracharya formulated Advaitavad, impersonalism, it has been very influential in India and indirectly throughout the world in the spheres of philosophy and science. The only issue is that one can only hold to such an idea only by denying the clear dictates of logic, experience, and common sense. Advaita Vedanta is built on the evidence of statements in the Upanishads that seem, at least by the way he interprets them, to declare that only Brahman, the one supreme truth beyond all differentiation, is real. Because he doesn't comment on the verses that talk about duality. Mm-hmm. Right? He doesn't talk about anything that's Dwaita. He only catches the Advaita verses. You know, it's a typical, you know, if you want to establish something, you just pick those points that support what you're saying. You know. You know, he was being so unreasonable. You know, he just wasn't listening. No matter what I said, he just wouldn't listen. You know, the other side. You know, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to sit there and listen while he's hitting me with a stick or something like that? What is he thinking? This guy's crazy. You know, like that. You know, so like that. You don't take that side of it. Otherwise, it won't look good in, you know, in your presentation.
While he's waterboarding me.
Yeah. Why aren't you talking?
Then he says, Shankara said, now in this way you go on.
Yes, and then he just said like that, you go on. So he doesn't actually deal with all of it, because he won't. Because it's foolish. But his job is to bewilder the atheist. Yes. So he does a good job. Yeah, so it's still going on.
Yeah.
Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan first restates the Mayavad position, then he defeats it. The one Brahman, which is mere consciousness, without qualities, is described as the ultimate reality in Shruti statements like Yat tu ekam, eva dvitiyam, Brahma. Brahma is one without a second. Right? You know, so it has that ekam in it. You know, Chandyogi Upanishad 6.2.1. Vijnanam, you can see here, right? Brahma, he's one without a second. Means there's no one else like him. It doesn't mean that there's not others. Otherwise, why say that he's one without a second unless, you know, he's superior to something? Right? If there's only one, you know, yes, it's one without a second. You know, it's like, who cares? You know, if there's a big rock and there's a whole bunch of little ones, then this is, you know, this is one without, there's no one equal to.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, Asamurtva. Right?
Yeah. Could have just said, Brahman is one.
Yeah, well, there is those statements also. But you understand, that's what he does. He tricks them by how he interprets it. That's why it's called word juggling. Vijnanam anandam brahma. Brahma is pure consciousness and bliss. But that doesn't mean he's not a person. No. It's just like that, right? Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28. Neha nanasti kinchana. None of the dualities of this world exist in reality. It doesn't mean that they don't have their own variety. Right? Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.9. Right? So what we've seen is by the Veda is establishing that the Lord is supreme. There's no one is equal to him. There's no material, you know, how you say, the effect of the modes and all that within the Lord or the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what it's actually establishing. So he's just taking these and then twisting them so that people get a misunderstanding. This describes the principle of oneness, but how to account for the apparent duality of this world? Shankara calls it a creation of illusion, a jnana. From God all the way down to the jivas. Since Brahman is supposed to be the only reality and free from imperfection, what this force of illusion actually is hard to say. Is it Brahman? No, because Brahman by definition is jnana or knowledge, opposed to all illusion. Is it different from man? Brahman? No, because Brahman is all that exists. Therefore, Shankaracharya characterizes ajnana as anirvachaniya, impossible to explain. Right? So you just do that, and then everybody leaves you alone. Right? Right? But he then asserts that ajnana divides into two functional aspects, knowledge, vidya, and ignorance, avidya. Okay, so then this illusion, then even here his vidya is actually still part of illusion. So that means then there's no real meaning to the Mayavadis discussing philosophy. Is it still all illusion according to them? Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan paraphrases this opinion in technical language. Endowed with vidya, Brahman becomes Ishvara Chaitanya, and endowed with avidya, Brahman becomes Jiva Chaitanya. Right. So remember before they were talking about that there were two aspects. There's the Jiva and then there's Ishvara, the Supreme. Because that way then they can accommodate Vishnu and how he is controlling the world, creating, maintaining, and destroying. But that's the vidya aspect. So that's Ishvara Chaitanya. Right? But it's still all within illusion. That's their that's the thing. Because the point is that if it's all Brahman, then ultimately there can't be the form of the Lord. But at the same time, all the Shastras talk about how, you know, every Shastra talks about how the Lord's created, how Vishnu creates, maintains, destroys. He was there before the creation. So how do you accommodate all that? So then it has to be that Maya has these two aspects, vidya and avidya, or knowledge and ignorance. So the knowledge side then is the Ishvara, part of the illusion. And then the jivas are in ignorance. So they're controlled by this overall illusion. Does that make sense? Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense. But the point is this is what how they're trying to explain, because they have to try to work all these things in, because it is pretty obvious that the Shastras talk a lot about Vishnu and how he's the supreme, right? Yes.
Do they have a concept of spiritual world beyond Brahmacharya?
No, not this kind. Not the Mayavadis. No, not at all. There's nothing. It's not like the. Even amongst the Buddhists, you have those ones who, there's the original Adi Buddha, you know, he's blue with four arms, and these kind of things. It's one of the branches. Is you have all these Mahayan, Hinayan, Terayan. So one of them in there somewhere has this, like that. So then, no, it doesn't seem to be. It's just all Vermont, and somehow or another that seems interesting, you know, just to do nothing. So I guess theme songs like Monday nothing, Tuesday nothing, Wednesday. Yeah. No, that's the Mayavadi song. No.
As it was mentioned before, that Mayavadi should technically starve to death, but unfortunately they don't.
It would definitely
solve
the problem. But the thing is, the thing is, why these things are here is because people want.
Yes.
Yeah. They want to be an illusion. Yeah. Because otherwise it's obvious that, otherwise what's the alternative? Then you have to surrender to the Lord. Yeah. They don't want to give up that control and enjoying element. So because of that, then Mayavada philosophy is there.
Yeah.
Right? Buddhism is there. You know, these atheistic Jainism, these atheistic kind of religions.
Mm.
And then those who want to believe in God, but only as he's providing things what we want, then you have these other, you know, these that focus on karma. Right? Like that. So like that, it's all going to be one or the other. It's either, you know, it's some aspect of karma you're going to get benefit, or it's all going to be destroyed. And so one or the other is basically the two categories you get. And a little variety in between. You know, there's no question. Do you get green couches? You know, on the the good side, or is it not green countess, or you end up in the boat with a talking lion, you know, stuff like that, you know. You know, so you have all your different, you know, concepts of what.
Yeah.
Eternity with your family.
Eternity with your family.
No. I don't know whether that's
a
Is that
heaven or hell?
It depends.
Yeah.
With your bad hip.
Eternally with
bad hip.
Okay, so then.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Sanyatai Gaur, thank you.
But Maharaj, without the explanation of the acharya like that, we can know nothing. So.
Yeah, no.
We know only confusions.
Yeah, yeah, not just otherwise, it's explained at all, confused. Because I guarantee you probably even, except if you really taught Maya about this, they wouldn't even be able to discuss it so exactly.
Yes, yes. And it's a very, very important help for us to get in touch with this.
Yes. No. Yes.
To get out of here.
Yes.
It would be a bad idea to try and seek out some of these top Mayavadis and just listen to what they actually say.
No, because what is what they say has already been presented by the Acharya.
It could be interesting.
No, but that's all they said.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, they just presented nicely. You know, green bird and a green tree, that kind of thing. You know, the one about the pot, you know,
Breaks
the pot in the air.
So you will send me the leaf?
Yeah. You know, what happens to the pot? The pot's still lit. So, no, one should avoid that.
Because
that's what Lord Chaitanya says. He does not go here.
See,
Shankaracharya, what he's presenting, he's just, as we see, as he presents something, he only presents part of it.
Yeah.
So you can actually still see the devotional side.
Yeah.
But his followers, then they just take that straight. So that's why you just don't want to listen to that.
Yeah.
It's dangerous even to get the kirtan. Those are those kirtans, you know, because they try to be Namavas.
Yes, they just avoid it.